Late Night City with Pete Price. And now, my story. Real people, real stories.
We're going to talk to a guy called Philip Parry about a book called Taxi Tales, which is going to be interesting because it's got to be at least an encyclopedia because there must be so many. Hello, Philip.
I am AC Yorker.
I am indeed. So you are a taxi driver?
Yeah, in there, Skep.
How long have you been a taxi driver?
About 25 years, maybe a little bit longer than that.
You must have a few stories.
There's certainly a few, yeah. There's a few in this book as well.
When did you get the idea of writing the book?
Well, originally, it wasn't that book that I wrote. I wrote a novel. And when that was published, a mate of mine, to help me out, basically created a web page and a blog page. Mm-hmm. And then on the blog page, to keep people interested, obviously you've got, you know, a variety of things on the page. That idea came up. We were putting a taxi tale sort of a month on. And it was just dead popular on the page with people looking at it and commenting on it and what have you. And then the idea came to both of us, really, which was, why not write a book about it? So it was done. You know what I mean? Done and dusted, and there it is.
Interesting. I'll tell you what, before we talk about Taxi Tales, let's talk about the novel. What was the novel about?
The novel's called Three Wishes, right? And I've got this off by heart in my head, by the way. It's basically the story of a young fella. He's unemployed. He's bored with life in general. And unbeknown to him, he's granted three wishes. So at some point then, he basically wishes for something exciting to happen. That wish is obviously granted, and then it's the story of what happens to him after that. But you've got to bear in mind that wishes come, that excitement comes in different forms, mm-hmm. type of things. And the second one to that is halfway. I'm old-fashioned, you see, I write with a pen and paper. So the second one is scruffily written half amount now.
Yeah.
That should be done fairly soon. And then there's another one, a poetry book called View From My Mind, which basically is my style of poetry. That's the only way I can put it. I don't live in the world of Wordsworth or ye olde English world. You know what I mean? I live in my world and I speak how I speak. So that's another one.
Now tell me, where did this idea of writing come from? Have you always had it when you were a kid, or?
People keep asking me that. Not so much. I'm not the biggest reader in the world, but when I was a kid, I've got two older brothers, and one of them mainly used to read an awful lot. So they'd pass books on to me. And I'd look at them and I'd never, ever think, you know, I could do better than that. I've never thought that. But yeah. I used to always think, I could do that. I'd love to do that, get a book published. And then years later, I was a taxi driver when I wrote Three Wishes. But it had been very quiet at the time. So I jibbed the job for a bit. I'd spat my gummy out type of thing. And I just walked away from the job, only for a few weeks. And in that few weeks, I thought, you know what, I might as well give it a go. I just started doing it. I didn't even know at the time what I was going to write. I just knew I need to write something. And then the idea popped into my head and off I went, you know what I mean?
Now, you've written this book called Taxi Tales. Let's just park that to one side a minute. And let's talk about being a taxi driver. How has it changed in all the years you've been doing it?
The main way it's changed is the amount of money that you earn lately. Because of the fact, well, these are my reasons, actually. I think that when the smoking ban came out, it affected not only pubs and clubs and what have you, that had a knock-on effect on people like me, like taxi drivers, because of the fact that there's a lot of people. You know, if me and you went to the pub and I smoke, I always think, well, and you don't smoke, well, when I go out to have a ciggy, do you come out with me or do you stay inside? But it's just ridiculous because of the fact it ruins the conversation that me and you are having in the pub together. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of people had stopped going to the pub, the smokers had stopped going to the pub. And then there's the other things like the online shopping and what have you. You know, people that go to the, to the Asda or what have you for their shopping. And you can do online shopping now. Or there's free delivery from the supermarkets and what have you. Well, the free delivery has taken over from the taxi driver who used to pick these people up.
Never thought of it like that. Now, what about violence? Have you seen a big change in violence?
You know what? There's a huge thing that I've seen, which is a big change, and it causes a lot of violence, and that's people snorting rubbish up their nose. Mm-hmm. Because years and years ago, I could go to a pub and, two or three fellas would come out and they're all, drunk. And you look at them, and some people you look at and you think, ooh, they look like a bit of a handful. But there was one thing in my head there, and that basically was, they're drunk, I'm not. So at least I've got a chance of either fighting them off, if necessary, or getting the hell out and, getting away from them. Whereas now, people who are on drugs, they're completely different. You can't tell how they're going to react, and you can just be having a conversation with them quite normally. And then in their head, I suppose, there's a reason, but in my head, there's no apparent reason, and suddenly they're now very agitated or, you know, aggressive towards you or what have you. So it is a bit dodgy now where the drugs are concerned.
Now, you're a taxi driver in Skemmersdale, and I don't know what it's like up there for the wars, but what about the taxi wars? Have you seen a big change in them?
It's quite easy going where taxis are concerned in Skem, to be honest with you. There's three firms in Skem, private hire firms, and there's obviously the Hackney drivers. In the daytime, the only thing with the Hackney drivers in the daytime is that they get a bit upset about people. Like the concourse shopping centre and the Asda during the day, where most people are getting the taxis from or to and from. And the Hackney drivers have always had that thing in their head where I think they own the concourse and that it's their right to pick the people up. So there is a bit of a, you know, where the Hackney rank is. If you get anywhere near it, they're all a bit snuffy with you, or they'll say something to you, you know what I mean? But it's not really anything bad.
Now, talking to Philip Parry, he's given us a basis of who he is with his job on taxis, and have been on a long time. To write a book like Taxi Tales, surely the biggest problem you would have is stuff you haven't put in the book, because there must be a million stories.
Well, there you go, because this one is Taxi Tales, and right now, in this, let me just explain this before you. First of all, the fellow that I mentioned before, my mate, does the web page and the blog page. He's a bit more technical than me on that side of things. That's Glenn Pye, by the way. And Glenn, all the stories in Taxi Tales, either happened to me or Glenn.
Right.
And what we've done, I said to him, all right, we're going to do it. And at first I was thinking, how can I come up with that many tales? Obviously you can come up with a lot, but you need ones that are interesting.
Yeah.
So I said to my mate Glenn, you give us some of your stories as well, and then wrote them again in my style, you know what I mean? Because I didn't want it written in a completely different sort of pen, like, you know what I mean? So we've done that. And as we speak, well, not literally as we speak, but the Taxi Tales 2, the follow-up to that is already in the process of being done. You know, we're both getting things together again. And it'll be a bit longer than this one, you know what I mean? And then there's like 50 years between us on the taxis. Yeah. So there's probably a 3 and 4 and 5, you know what I mean? We can carry on.
Now, how have other taxi drivers related to it?
For taxi drivers that I know who've seen it and read it, I've not had a bad comment at all. They all think it's good, and they all think it's quite entertaining and funny, to be honest with you. The stories aren't all funny. There's some horrendous stories in it about things that have happened. And then there's some, you know, just the typical thing that you've got to put up with members of the public. I keep seeing police cars parked up in the night in Skem. And if I do, I've got little business card type of things, you know, with me web page on them. And I'll pull up and say to the copper in the car, yeah, if you bored, have a look at that. And they always look at me a bit strange. And then I tell them, you know, there's three books. And I always say, there's one of them called Taxi Tales. And the reason that I think you'll be interested in it as a policeman is because you deal with the public too. And then they sort of look at me strange. And then I say, there's a big difference though between me and you. And what's that? And I always say, well, I can't arrest them. Do you know what I mean? So I haven't got a clue whether they actually do, or any of them have actually had a look. And because there's some stories in it about the police where I've been stopped in the car, and you know, things that have been said to the at the time when I've been stopped, you know, trying to wear my way out of things, or you know, going too fast or whatever it is. But there's been some quite interesting little conversations with the police there, and they're in it as well. So I don't know whether if any of them have read it. I'm surprised I haven't been arrested, to be honest with you.
Philip, are you glad you've been a taxi driver? Would you
I'm
change?
Not glad.
Would you change?
It's been a long, long time being a taxi driver, and it is a struggle. But one of the things that the books that I've written, I never wrote them thinking I'm going to make piles of money. I wanted to write to see if it could get published, and then it's just become a hobby.
Yeah.
But you then, obviously, if I'm truthful, you have the thing in your head where you think, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, 4 million people bought my book? Well, if 4 million people buy my book, I won't be a taxi driver anymore. You know, that's the thing. People win the lottery and they carry on their job.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Yeah. Whether I would with another job, I don't know. That's basically what I've done for 25 years, so I'm quite used to it. I only work nights now as well, so.
Philip, Tell us some of the stories and take your time. Amuse us.
With some of the stories in the booth?
Yep.
Yeah, just little tiny things that people would not understand about the public. I picked a fella up from Matalan in Skene. And he come out with a suit on that looked like it was worth more than my house and a briefcase in his hand. Walked over, plonked his briefcase in the back seat and then took his jacket off, put that in the back seat and then got in the front. I said, where are you going, mate? And he said, Manchester. Well, with his plums in his mouth, said, he said, Manchester Airport. So I said, right, okay, so started going. He took his phone out of his pocket, dialed the number, and then he's prattling around the phone. But he was basically, I can't remember what he was saying exactly, but he was basically barking orders down the phone. And I mean, seriously, you know, do this, do that, do the other. And right in the middle of him talking, my radio in the car was on, the entertainment radio, whatever you want to call it. And he said, he looked at it, looked at me, and then he went, turn that down. And it wasn't on loud, so I just didn't. I just totally ignored him, carried on driving, and then he said, blah, 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 blah on the phone. And then he looked at me again, and he said, turn that down a little bit more aggressively. So I ignored him, got a little bit further. And on the phone then, he said to them, listen, I can't hear myself think. I'll phone you back in about 5 minutes. Plunked the phone down. And then he looked at me slowly, and he went, I told you to turn that down. And I said to him, do you know what, mate? You're in my office now, not yours. And his mouth completely, totally and utterly shut. And honestly, God, he didn't say another word until we got to the airport. And we were only just literally on the 58 by then. We just got out of the He didn't say another word. And when we got there, told him the price. He didn't go on the phone again either. I told him the price. And he got out the car, fiddled about in his pocket, gave me the money. He gave me a good tip as well. And then he got his briefcase and what have you. And then he just looked at me and he went, listen, mate, I'm sorry about that. I apologise. And should have done and walked off. And I thought, you know what? It was like he'd been chastised by his mother.
That was nice, that, though, because he apologised.
That was the thing about him. I would have been calling him fit to burn if he'd have got out and just walked away.
Yeah.
But, you know, inside the... His image as the businessman who orders people about, there's a real fella in there who's got a normal life, like, you know what I mean?
Philip, what's it like with the old ladies in the back of the taxi?
Do you know what? The old ladies are great. There's a bingo hall in Skene. Oh, well, I don't know whether it's still open now, to be honest with you, but for a while, I loved picking the ideas up because we get in the car and, you know what, they're all, tongue-in-cheek, naughty, saucy type of talk.
Yeah,
I think they've had a few sherbets when they come out of the bingo. And it's always that, but, you know, they'll get in the front of the car, or one will get in the front of the car, and they'll be saying, oh, I'll sit in front with the handsome taxi driver. And, you know, it's all that. But they're great. And I was talking to someone literally just the other night about this, actually, but I've always said this. It's a weird world because you'll get, you know, a fella will come out of a club or something, and they'll get in the car, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. And he looks like he's built like a barn door, but you've carved out a rock type of a man, and they'll get in. And if they're talking, and they're saying basically, oh, yeah, I'm dead hard, I'm dead tough, and I've beat someone up and blah, 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 in their big hard knock voice, well, I tend to talk back to them, you know, you're like a chameleon, so I sort of say, oh, yeah, I know what you mean, because I want them in and out. Well, the next fair can get in, and it can be a little cuddly old lady. She'll get in the car, and if she wants to talk to me about knitting, I can... join in with the knitting thing, because, you know, in, over, under, off, knit one, pale one, all that type of stuff. And you sort of become that person as well when they get in the car. But honestly, the old women and the old men are fantastic, because a lot of them will, you know, they don't try and engage you in conversation. But I always, so I was like, oh, mate, you're all right, you know what I mean? And then, what did you used to do type of thing?
Yeah.
And get them talking. As soon as you get them talking, that's it. They're so interesting, like the things you come out with.
Philip, what do you do about violence in the back of a taxi when somebody kicks off with their pals?
Well, there's been quite a few strange incidents happen, like, but if they're kicking off with each other, you know, you've just got to basically tell them to calm down, what have you, or you're never going to get home. You know, I'll stop the car. If they're having a go at me, mostly tends to happen where I'm concerned is they'll try and intimidate you. And they'll try and, you know, they'll get in the car and they'll turn the radio off, you know, the music right off, and then you turn down. Well, I don't know how other taxi drivers handle it, but here's one. This isn't something that's in the book, but here's a little incident where I picked two lads up. This made me laugh, this actually. I picked two lads up from Wigan, and they're both coming back to Skene. And the one in the front got in, and he was talking in that accent that I don't know whether you heard, the plastic Scouse accent.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's talking like that lad.
The heroin Scouse. Oh, lad, you know.
Yeah, that's it. And he got in the car and he went, I said, where are you going? He went, I'm going to a scam, lad. So I said, right, okay. So he started going, he went, bang, and turned the radio up. So I went, oh, mate, come on. You know what I mean? And turned the radio up. I said, don't be messing about like that. And he went, why not, lad? And turned the radio up again. So as he'd done it, I sort of whacked the back of his hand with my hand. And then I said, mate, seriously, show some respect here. You know what I mean? I'm doing my job. You just want to get home. And he went, oh, who do you think you are? And then he just was badgering me and badgering me. But he didn't touch the radio again, but he's badgering him and badgering me. And he's saying, who do you think you are? Why should I do what you tell me, lad? And he's giving it all this rubbish. Well, here's how you know, super intelligent this lad was. Because we got back to Skem. I said, where in Skem are you going when we come off the motorway? And he said, Digmore, the one area of Skem. But we're going to Diggy first, lad. So I said, right, okay, Diggy it is. So we went to Digmore. And his mate behind me, who hadn't said anything, got out. And I looked at him and said, where are you going? I'm going to Ashurst, lad. So I was like, okay. So we started going to Ashurst. There's a road in Skem called Stannanort Road, which is about a mile long, I think. Got on this Stannanort Road, and he hadn't said anything else. And then suddenly he got his phone, he holding it in front of his face, scrolling through his contact list. And he was saying, I won't say any of the names, but he's saying different names out of his contact list, and he's saying, do you know the Shutty Bodies? Do you know the, this fella and that fella? And some of these people had heard of, some of them I hadn't, and they're all supposedly, you know, the Hard Knocks knocking about.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, there's a little lay-by on Stanley Road, and I thought, right, sod yet. So pulled into the lay-by, took my seatbelt off and turned around and looked at him, and he was looking at me like he'd seen a ghost. I said, go on, mate. I said, are you threatening me there? And he went, what do you mean? I said, hit me with all these, you know, with all this name dropping. He threatened me in some way. And he went, I'm just telling you who I know. Right? So I went, all right, okay, cool. I said, well, first of all, I've never heard of any of them people. And secondly, I don't care who they are. I said, and now listen to this. Thirdly, you're going to have to be fast dialing that number, mate. And he went, what do you mean? I said, well, it's only me and you in the car. I said, before you've hit the last digit, I'll have not... And he just went completely silent. I said, do you want to get to Ashurst? And he went, yeah. He went, yeah, I do, lad. And he's on a bit of a panic. And so he's like, well, do us a favour, shut your mouth. If you speak again, you're getting out. It's simple as that. So he jumped over the road.
I love it.
When we got there, I said, he was just going by the shops in Ashurst. So is this all right here? And he went, yeah. Told him how much he was. He paid me. Didn't say anything. He just paid me. Got out the car. And with the door open, he went, this isn't over, lad. I'll remember you. Well, I'm here, mate. You know, I'm right in front of you now. You know what I mean? They're like one of them. They're like, yeah, little yaki. They're running away.
They made you laugh, don't they? Because they are in a different world.
Oh, a completely different world.
How do you cope with runners?
Runners?
Mm.
It depends what shoes I'm wearing, to be honest with you.
Right.
There's not much you can do with a runner. There's a bit of a myth, or this is what I've experienced with runners. They shouldn't be called runners. They should be called casually walk-awayers.
Right.
Because they'll be dead nice to you. Chat away. And the normal trick is, they'll say, you're there, you're at their destination, and they say, I've just got to nip in for the money, is that all right? Well, you can't say no, because if you say no, you don't get paid, because they obviously haven't got any money on them. You know what I mean? And you can't escort them there, you know, and leave your car and whatever. So you just got to, well, yeah, okay. And then they get out and they just casually stroll the way around the corner. And I think when they get around the corner, that's when they run.
Yeah. Now, what about, I always remember a taxi driver telling me, stayed with me forever this, a taxi driver had his car attacked by one of these rats, these young rats underage that know what they're doing. And he got him, put him in the back of his car, took him to the police station, and they were going to charge him with kidnapping.
Yeah.
Now, how do you deal with these rats?
Well, I'll give you a quick example of what I haven't done. What my brother's a taxi driver as well, right? He's older than me. He picked some fellas up, some lads up. I think that was from Wigan, but he's coming back from Wigan. When he got into Skem, one of them was saying, I'm going to be sick. The three lads in the car, one of them saying, I'm going to be sick. So he stopped the car, the lad got out and was around the back of the car. And then the other lad in the back, his mate, said, because he was taking a while, he said, I'll go and see if he's all right. So he got out. And then, so there's one lad left sitting there. And then you know, time's ticking on. And then my brother said to this lad, you know, come on, what's going on with your mates here? Like, and so he said, I'll go and hurry them up. So he got out of the car. As soon as he got out, my brother realised the other two weren't even there. They'd already gone. So this lad legged it and ran over the field. Well, my brother being my brother, he's not the type of person that you pick an arc with, basically, jumped out of the car and ran after them. And he actually caught this third lad, the last lad to get out of the car. What was said, and everything, I don't know. Nobody was beating up or fighting or anything. He just caught this lad and told him straight. And he ended up taking the lad's coat off him. Because they hadn't paid. So, and this lad apparently had a Helly Hansen big posh coat thing on. So he said, give us the coat, and then when you pay the money, I'll give you your coat back. Well, later on that night, the lad had obviously got home, spoke to his old fella, and his old fella had gone nuts because his dad phoned the taxi office and said, tell that taxi driver to come round with me lad's coat, and I've got the money. When he went down there, his dad was, all really falling over himself, apologising and embarrassed about what his son's done and all that. Like, but most of the time, if anybody gets out the car and he disappeared, there's not really much you can do about it. And I'm thinking, just talking about that with the, getting done for kidnapping them. For a while, I was on. I tried the Hackneys, right, and I settled at a Hackney, which was a really old Hackney cab. It's like driving a bus. And got my first job on the phone. The good thing about that was an old man and old woman got in the back. Now, I'm used to driving a car, not a Hackney. So I pulled away from the Concours, flinging it around the little roundabout and going around the car. And I kept realising they were all sliding across the back of the seat. You just see them in the mirror. And first of all, they got in and I said, where are you going? And this muffled voice behind me said, I can't hear. And I ended up, I was going, where are you going? Because the stupid, the position behind me, I forgot all about that. So after opening that, and this fella's now getting quite annoyed in it, and wherever it was, Bancroft or somewhere he was going, and he went, Bancroft! He must have been thinking I was deaf. So anyway, I said, right, okay. So got up to Bancroft, stopped the car, detained me, and then they couldn't get out. And they both, these doors are locked. And I said, hang on a minute. So I got out, opened the back door, and that was it. They were all right, they got out. Next job. Nobody could get out me hack. So I was thinking, well, I'll tell you, one good thing, it's going to keep me fit, this, because I'm in and out the car, every single job here. Went back to the concourse, to the taxi rank, one of the hackneys I was speaking to me, and I said to him, I don't know what's wrong with this. I said, but you just can't open the doors at the back. I've got to get out every time. He started laughing. He went, Phil, he said, when you're in a hackney cab, if you've got your foot on the brake, the back doors are locked. If you take your foot off the brake, the back doors are released and they open. I never known that. But that's where it comes when you're saying, he could have been done with kidnap.
Yeah.
In a hack, if you want to, if you stick your foot on the brake, you can't get out.
Interesting that. Philip, the most wonderful thing about Skemmersdale, when I was on the road as a comic, I've worked the clubs up there, I've never seen so many roundabouts, and I've never seen anybody walking to ask the way.
There's two things about what you're saying there. The roundabouts where I'm concerned, I'd have a roundabout over the traffic light any day of the week, right, apart from the way your passenger side tyre out going round them up. And they literally do, we're traffic drivers, if you're doing 1,000 miles a week, there's a lot of them miles are going round, turning right, round a roundabout in Skem. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the other thing is, it's very rare, if I'm not working, if I'm ever walking anywhere, right, and somebody in Skem stops me, pulls up next to me and says, excuse me, mate, can you tell me where such a thing is? I always say, I'm sorry, mate, I can't, I'm not from around here. And they go, okay, and off they go, they'll find somebody else. And the reason I say that is because if you try and direct them, you say, right, go to the next roundabout and turn left. Right, now the first roundabout, they're understanding. And then you say, the second roundabout, you need to turn. When you get to the fourth roundabout, they're looking at you, you know what I mean? As if they're thinking, this fella's taking the piss out of me a bit, like, you know what I mean? So, and inevitably what they'll do is they'll say, right, okay, I've got it. They look so confused. And you see them go to the first roundabout and they take the wrong exit off that anyway. And you think, well, it's like a Bermuda Triangle. Once you get in Skem, sometimes you can't get out.
Philip, it sounds fascinating. The book is called Taxi Tales.
It's available with the others in paperback or Kindle. It's there. And it's got a couple of reviews and what have you on it on the Amazon page and what have you. But if you go on, if anybody goes on the Amazon page, not the Amazon page, my web page, and there's a menu on it, and one of the things that I've done with all the books I'm concerned is a little video trailer for the books.
Yep.
And, it, and my style, so the one with Tati there is quite funny because I've tried to sort of tongue-in-cheek reenact, you know, some of the incidents that, that happen in the car. So I've got a couple of members of the public who've been in my car to do a little bit of acting for me, and I've got some of the taxi drivers and my mates to do a bit of acting for me, so that's quite funny.
Sounds good fun. Philip, to finish off, tell us your favourite story out of the book.
You know what? There's so many of them in the book that...
Well, just give us one.
All right, I'll give you a quick gist of what this story is. I picked a girl up in Wigan, right? She come over to the car with a great big, fat, greasy, sloppy hamburger type of thing in a polystyrene tray. She got in, come over to the car, got in the car. She was absolutely slaughtered, drunk out of her mind. She got in the car, and I said to her, listen, close that up. You can't eat that in the car, right? So she went, right, okay. She was slurring the words and whatever. So started going, and I said to her straight away, listen, I'm going to have to stop on the way back and get some diesel. I was really low on diesel. So she said, yeah, okay. So pulled into this garage, got out the car, and I hadn't put the diesel in. I looked in. My driver's window was open. I looked in the car. She was sitting in the passenger seat. Looked in the car, and she got this burger out. It's dripping all kinds of horrible, wonderful sort of ingredients all over her hand, and I don't know where it was going. So I just went, right, that's it. Leaned in, grabbed the whole thing off it, and threw it in the bin, right? Got back in the car, and she went and paid me diesel, got back in the car, and she went absolutely nuts, and she's swearing and shouting at me all the way back, that's her burger, and I've got no right to do that, and blah, blah, blah. Got back to Skem, so much so was she screaming and shouting. We were very near where she was going, and I had enough, and I said to her, listen, you've got two choices here, love. I said, you're either basically shut up or get out. I can't go, I don't get paid for this amount of abuse, you know what I mean? So she did, she got out, right? I felt bad about that. I drove away, and then I felt bad about it, and I thought, I can't leave it. She's on Pimbo, basically, through the industrial estate. And I thought, right, I better go and find her. Very long story short, actually. I went back to find her. I couldn't find her. So this will sound a bit strange, but just bear with me till the very end of this. I then drove to her house, right? Got my front door key out, opened the door, went upstairs, and there she was lying in bed. It was my daughter.
What?
It was my daughter, one of my daughters. And she'd been out on the lash. She thought she had the right to eat this horrible burger. We laugh about it now, like, but and that was ages ago. You know what I mean?
She's constantly
telling people. It makes me laugh. She always says to people, you know, I've heard of people who've been thrown out of a taxi, but to get thrown out of a taxi by your dad.
Tell them how they can get in touch with you again.
PhilipParry.weebly.com is my webpage, and if you go on that, it tells you all the info about everything. There's videos and all kinds of daft things that I've done for entertainment sort of thing, just for a laugh.
Philip, it's been a joy to talk to you. Thanks, mate.
And you, Peter. Thank you very much. Late Night City with Pete Price on City Talk 105.9.